from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, first we'll be joined by Roman Mars, producer of the innovative radio show and podcast called 99% Invisible, which focuses on design and architecture. Then at 10:30. Former Sonic Youth singer and guitarist Kim Gordon, she plays San Francisco's Noise Pop Festival this week. She'll join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Roman Mars produces a radio show and podcast called 99% Invisible, and it focuses on design and architecture, but that doesn't just mean buildings. He investigates, well, really the history of just about everything, and he's joining us this half hour to talk about what he does in 99% Invisible, which went, by the way, from being an underground pet project to a Kickstarter success story. And some of his fans call him the Ira Glass of design. And welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
Kickstarter story, just coming off of talking about Silicon Valley and everything, I think maybe we ought to lay out first for listeners, because you were looking for about $42,000 and wound up with $170,000. It's quite a success story.
Yeah, it was really, really amazing the way that people really came through for me.
This is for your third season, in fact, right?
Yeah, so we're in the middle of it right now.
Started in September?
Yep.
And it's a testament to your success and how much people really like what you do. So congratulations on all this. Was This American Life a kind of model or paradigm for you?
Well, I mean, it was a huge influence. I mean, most of the independent public radio producers in my cohort, I'm in my late 30s, I think, have heavily influenced by Ira Glass and his show, and then, you know, later on by Jad Abumrad and Radiolab and all those sorts of things. So yeah, it was a huge influence on me.
Well, you were on Radiolab, weren't you? Didn't you get kind of launched on Radiolab?
Yeah, that was one of the things. The show was going for about a year, and then they featured the show, and then it really took off after that point.
And who would have known? A guy who was studying plant genetics, right? winds up as a radio guy, or a literature professor winds up as a radio guy.
Right, exactly.
The world of radio. Actually, I'd like listeners to get a little taste of what you do before we talk more about it. And as I said, the show covers what it covers. I want to have our listeners listen to a show about subway escalators.
This is the first joke I ever really noticed as a design joke.
I like an escalator, man, because an escalator can never break. It can only become stairs.
That's Mitch Hedberg.
All right. There would never be an escalator temporarily out of order sign. Only an escalator temporarily stairs. Sorry for the convenience.
Being designed to elegantly deal with the extreme failure case is probably an underappreciated design element, but it really is one of the things that makes an escalator great. Worst case, there's stairs. See how far you get in a broken elevator.
And I bet everyone on this escalator is enjoying that design aspect too. And we're getting our cardio.
That's 99% Invisible Zone Sam Greenspan walking up an escalator in a metro station in D.C.
An escalator on a DC metro platform is like a fine wine. It's better with age and without any industrial lubricant.
Sam lives in Baltimore now, but he lived in DC for a few years. He said that this sound came to embody the excitement he felt from living in a city.
The DC metro system, it's not the best in the world, but it's pretty good. Although a lot of people do lament the poor condition of the metro's escalators. Some are just flat out broken, and then there are some that work but make these crazy noises, which, you know, annoy a lot of people. But for me, I found that a skronking escalator was like this little trumpeter announcing how awesome it was to live in the city.
Love that word, skrunking. That's from 99% Invisible. It's a design and architecture-focused show, as we said, and a podcast produced in Oakland by Roman Mars, who's here with us, and airs on KALW, which is 91.7 FM. And the last voice you heard was his producer, Sam Greenspan. Both now live in the East Bay, and it's sort of like you can see design anywhere, really, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's really one of the great things about the show, and I mean, one of the reasons why I got into public radio in general was I like studying all different types of things. And focusing on design gives you a little bit of focus, the human-built world. But it really allows you to say the human-built world is a pretty broad canvas to sort of start to explore and to paint on and all sorts of fun things to do. And so I like design as an area of study quite a bit.
Like doing a public radio program for the same reason. You can just talk about anything. But you got early on doing one-minute architecture pieces for KLW.
Well, that was the idea of the show. So the idea was presented to me because the AIA San Francisco and KLW got together and said, what would it be like
AIA
to do
is the architects show.
The American Institute of Architects in San Francisco. And Margie O'Driscoll, the executive director there, and Matt Martin from KLW had sort of gotten together and said, well, what would it be like to have an architecture minute that we dropped into the show, and asked me what I thought of that, because I've worked on any number of public radio shows and I sound design shows and I get them launched and then I move on and do something else. And so they asked me what I thought of it. And I said, well, it can't be a minute because I want something that people can love. And I wanted it to be at least 4 minutes. and then I wanted to expand it into design in general, because I thought that if you can sort of point out the sort of seams and joints of everything, and you could start to see the world as just a series of stories, and beyond what I actually cover, the listeners can actually like enjoy the world in a new way and see the world in a new way, pay attention in a new way. And so that's how it evolved into what it is today.
Well, I was looking at some of the things you've done, like a purple hotel outside of Chicago, sound of the World Trade Center towers, breathing.
Yeah.
Depression induced by airport design. I mean, you're pretty imaginative, wide field and potpourri of things.
Yeah, well, I like to think of it as, the lens. I use design as a lens of just humans and how they interact with the world and how they interact with each other.
And process, so, you're interested in, aren't you?
Yeah, the process. I mean, a lot of people thought the idea was, or people I really respect said to me, I thought you were insane for doing a radio show about architecture and design because it's so visual. But the thing is if there's a design, there's a process. If there's a process, there's a story. And a story is just like any other story, and you can tell it on the radio. And especially if you add in some geeky enthusiasm, which is designers and architects tend to have a great deal of geeky enthusiasm.
You even got your title from Bucky Fuller. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
99% Visible.
Exactly.
Right from Bucky Fuller. Let's hear another sample. Many of the shows dig into the history of a particular design, like Roman Mars indicated, and he always says the show about the Plimsoll line is your favorite show. It's the line that's painted on the side of ships, or one of your favorites, I guess.
Yeah.
So let's hear how the origins of the line came about.
If you look at the outer hull of commercial ships, down by the waterline, you might find a painted circle bisected with a long horizontal line. This simple marking is called the load line, or as I prefer, the Plimsoll line. And not to oversell it, but this elegant graphic design has saved thousands of lives.
This is one of my favorite examples of design, because what I really like in the world is when you can find a massive problem that definitely needs solving, and with some thought you can solve it with something as simple as a circle with a line through it. I just find it amazing. That's what I'd like to do with my career.
That's Tristan Cook.
And I'm a human factors engineer, so that means that I look at the way that people interact with their environment and figure out how that will affect their behavior.
The massive problem that needed solving in the 19th century that Tristan is referring to was the huge number of British ships sinking in the ocean because they were overloaded and in disrepair, sending hundreds of merchant seamen to a watery grave. The problem was so widespread that these vessels became known by another name.
Coffin ships?
Coffin ships. Now, overloading ships has certainly happened since there have been ships to overload, but it was the introduction of insurance that created the coffin ship.
It's still a colloquial term for ships that are overinsured, so they're worth more money to the person that owns them at the bottom of the ocean than they are afloat.
So ship owners would purposefully overload older ships with cargo, thinking that if the ships made it, they hit the jackpot. But if the ships didn't make it, they still made a lot of money on the insurance claim. And the unintended consequence of insurance was that ship owners had an incentive to sink their own ships and send hundreds of souls to the bottom of the ocean. This is where our hero, British MP Samuel Plimsoll, and the Plimsoll line comes in.
Plimsoll wrote a book which was really championed the issue, and that went really wide.
And eventually, due to widespread public support, the Merchant Shipping Act of 1876 was passed. It required the simple, elegant graphic I described earlier, a circle with a long horizontal line at the center, to be painted on the outside of the hull to show the maximum loading point of the ship. The mark let a third party know plainly and clearly when a vessel was being overloaded and at risk of sinking in rough seas. If you see that horizontal line above the water, you're good. And if you don't, well, you could be sunk.
That's from 99% Invisible. Again, by the way, you can hear on KLW, and also the podcast is on iTunes at 99percentinvisible.org. How'd you discover that story?
That was one that the fellow I interviewed there, Tristan Cook, he does a design blog called Humans and Design, I was really interested in. And he said he's just like, I love this really simple graphic, and I'm thinking about getting a tattoo of it. And I was like, oh, why do you love it? And that's just sort of started from there. And so we did research, and I talked to him, and we put it all together.
And this is one of your favorites.
Yeah, I like it because one of the things that's tough about covering design on the radio, but graphic design in particular, is you either have to know the graphic or you have to describe it so well as to get a clear picture in your mind. And this one was so simple that a circle with a line through it that you could pretty well picture it if you've never really encountered it before. And also, the story is a story about regulation and sort of human rights and struggle that can exist even if you never bother conjuring the image in your mind at all.
That's so. A great story. And incidentally, let me take this opportunity to open up the phone lines. Roman Mars is going to be with us just for this half-hour segment. So if you have something you'd like to ask him, or if you have a comment on what you've heard, and we'll try to hear another cut from 99% Invisible, or if you just would like to join this conversation, we invite you to do so. You may have contributed to Kickstarter and want to know how your money's being used, whatever's on your mind. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. And again, we welcome your involvement in the program. Toll-free, you can join us right now at 866-733-6786. And as you well know, many of you who listen to the program regularly, there are a number of other ways of joining us. Email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any of your questions or comments on the website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Particularly interested to hear from some of you who know the podcast or know the radio program and might want to comment on your reactions to particular shows. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And as I said, this is a half-hour segment, so if there's something you'd like to contribute No, we're not talking about contributing again to Kickstarter here. In the way of conversation, please join us at 866-733-6786. In fact, listeners may want to call and propose topics to you.
Yeah, sure. They do that all the time.
I'm sure they do, and you're open to that. You're kind of obsessed with this lake bridge over in the Golden Gate Park now, though.
The Alvord Lake Bridge. That's my current obsession. Yeah, I've been meaning to do a story about that for years. I've done a few interviews, read whole books about concrete and reinforced concrete. And so the Alvord Lake Bridge is one I'll finally do as a story, I think, eventually. Probably at the end of May is the idea right now.
Just to do one on the origin of a toothbrush?
Yeah, well, the origin of a particular toothbrush, the one that the fat handle that came out maybe about 10 years ago, the cross-hatched fat handle that people spent a lot of time and effort to put into it. And so I was intrigued by that and sort of using it as a model of, you know, how the process of design works, of where you prototype, you iterate the design, and then you put it out and refine it. And it struck me as a good example to do like that, because a lot of things that they did with that toothbrush was different than people thought about toothbrushes. And so,
so it's really what intrigues you, what you observe, and what intrigues
it's
you.
It's completely driven by what intrigues me.
And what it turns out is that you may not be such an idiosyncratic guy after all, because what intrigues you intrigues other people.
That's the goal.
And that's been working. So, again, congratulations on all this. Let me bring in a caller here, and we'll go to Earsharp in Auburn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if your guest can comment on the blinking cursor that is used in editing software that shows where you're editing and how it has changed the way we interact with the computers at the beginning of when the computers came on.
Wow. I don't know if I really can.
I think you're out of his bailiwick there.
The main thing is how it affects you. That's what I would do. That's always what I do, is just ask people like how that sort of thing affects your user interface. I mean, for me, I've never really felt a great reaction to.
Well, how does it affect you, Irsha?
Well, it tells me where when we are editing the software or when we are editing the word processing, it tells me where I am. I believe there is a story behind it that has been told that it was a patent that before it came about, there was a lot of thought about how to give that feedback on where that editing was. So I was wondering if your guest was aware of that or not.
I am not aware of it.
I think that
That's
makes
a great
two
story.
Of us. Neither of us. But thank you for bringing that to our attention and appreciate your calling in with it. And let me go to a caller up in Sonoma. David, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to thank your guest for taking the concepts of architecture and design and bringing it to the radio format or forum. And it takes a lot of imagination and description, of course. But what is great is that you take something like the plimsoll line that I'm familiar with as a sailor, or a toothbrush, which I'm familiar with as a dentist, and say, you know, these things didn't just happen by mistake. It happened by design. And I think what your program helps do is it explains the complexity of life that's not so apparent, so that I think people should appreciate that. Maybe that's what intrigues you about those things.
That's
my comment.
Yeah, thank you. And you're the first sailor dentist I've talked to in a long time.
I mean, that's absolutely what I try to do is... producing the show has made me really become a much more optimistic person because I deal with people and deal with problems that are solved by smart people all the time. And I think that's actually, when you see those things in the world, it makes the world a little bit richer and more interesting.
Well, here's Evan who writes, no offense to you, Michael Krasny, actually Michael Kranzi intended, but 99% Invisible has quickly become my favorite podcast. No offense taken. Roman's pieces are short, digestible, unbelievably fascinating. He's focused on design. It seems to expand the options of topics for the podcast rather than being a limiting factor. I've always wondered, what does Roman think are some other topics that are ripe for niche podcasts? And for such an urban-minded podcast, I was surprised to discover Roman is a resident of the East Bay suburbs. Why is that?
Thank you. There's lots of niche podcasts. I think there's a lot of potential to do smaller things. There's a lot of good podcasts on gaming and movies and stuff that I love. Politics. I love the Decode DC that Andrea Seabrook's doing. And
there's a lot of gold in those hills. So
I think so too. Why I live in the East Bay? it's nice. I don't have to commute, so I can sit at home and do my radio show and not work at Yahoo and enjoy myself there. So that's why I live there.
Well, you do have a lot of enjoyment and fun, it's clear, when you do these shows. So I wanted listeners to hear one where you went back and traced the origins of a particular beer that's made only by monks in a Belgium abbey.
Cyrus Farivar is on a mission. He's trying to get a case of beer called West Vlaeteren.
I'm not Dutch, so I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's West Vlaeteren.
It's not easy to get, but apparently it's worth it.
Oh, yes.
If you're a beer nerd or have a friend who's a beer nerd, you've probably heard of Belgian beers. Belgians take their beer very seriously.
Now, amongst these Belgian breweries and Belgian ales, there's a very specific subtype, Trappist beers. Anyone who knows anything about beer will probably start to get glassy-eyed and have a warm, delicious feeling whenever they talk about them. Here's what you need to know about Trappist beers. First, they're amazing. Second, they're made by Trappist monks. These monks trace their roots to a monastery in 17th century France and have since spread out to all over the world.
The main concept behind the Trappist lifestyle is that the abbey should be economically self-sufficient. In other words, the monks should make something and sell it to the public as a way to fund the operations of the abbey itself. Some make cheese, some make spirits. There's even one in Germany that makes lentil soup.
But none of the Trappist products are nearly anywhere as famous as the beer. Only 7 beer-making Trappist abbeys exist. 6 are in Belgium, and 1 is in the Netherlands.
Goedendag, bonjour, hello. U bent verbonden met de bierverkoop van de Sint-Sixtus Abdij.
If you're lucky enough to talk to a monk, and yes, you do talk to a monk, to take your reservation, you have to give your license plate number and be available to come pick up your crate during the appointed time that weekend. You're limited to 1 crate per person, per car, maximum 2 per car. And you can't buy more than 1 crate during a 60-day period. Oh, and you agree not to resell the beer as well.
For information, please see our website, www.
Well, that's again from 99% Invisible, a design and architecture focused show and podcast produced in Oakland by Roman Mars and Sam Greenspan. And apropos question here from a listener named Dana, who says, "Hi, Roman. I'm listening to Forum Online from New York in order to hear your interview. I was hoping you could speak about how you determine the subject matter for each of your episodes, what kind of research goes into finding topics, and how do you decide?" I bet people were wondering that listening to that beer.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, the beer one as an example is like Cyrus is an independent radio producer, and now he writes for Ars Technica. And he was in Germany, and he was like, "I love this beer. I want to figure out how to, I want to do a design story about it." And he was really focused on the actual beer itself. And I was intrigued by it, but I don't drink beer. I don't have a real dog in that fight as to what is the best beer in the world. But I was really intrigued by the hoops that you had to go through to get it. And the given your license plate and stuff. And I was like, this kind of runs counter to the current trends of making everything available to all people all the time.
Especially
on web
beer.
And online. Exactly, exactly. And so I was intrigued by that, because these monks weren't trying to create artificial scarcity. They didn't have a lot of interest in people buying their beer. They just wanted to support the abbey. And so that was what intrigued me about that. And so I just look for the types of things. Like, what's great is I do cover mundane things. I cover simple things that people overlook. And the goal of the show is to make that exciting and interesting to people. And if I can just find that one little factoid or that one little thing that you would take away from listening to the show and you would tell someone at a party, or just something that intrigues you, that's what gets me started. And then there's, you know, all
then
kinds
the research
of research.
To more and more of those
exactly,
little gem things.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the type of thing that gets me going and makes me choose the things I choose. I mean, for the most part, there's an embarrassment of riches in terms of the subject I can cover. So it's mainly what is the thing that just I can grab purchase onto and begin to do a show about. And some, as a radio producer, that can be the content, but it could also be I heard a great song and I could talk over that and it would sound good, or I could find this joke I want to tell, like this gag I want to do.
Actually, speaking of great songs, I was thinking how important music is to what you lay out.
Yeah. No, it's a huge part of the show.
And quick question from a listener named Andrew, who says, "Edward Tufte is widely known as the father of information design. Are there any other innovators in the field of information visualization that you think we should also know about?"
Well, Tufte is the one I would tell you to know about. I mean, honestly, I mean, right now we're in a really great age of information display and stuff. And it's one of the things that comes across on the web and that people can form communities around. And there's a real love and passion for the great form of information. I mean, I think the guy that I really like is Nicholas Felton. He does these things called the Feltron Annual Reports about his own life. And he presents information beautifully. He's actually now, he used to live in New York, but now he's down at Facebook and lives in the Bay Area. So he's a guy I really admire and did a story about.
So what's coming up next for you?
Well, the Albert Lake Bridge is coming up. I'm doing a show about the design of gambling machines and video poker machines, stuff about sign painters, like handcrafted sign painters, all kinds of stuff.
Let me know if you find out how to set those video poker machines. I appreciate you're going being with us, and again, congratulations on your success.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Roman Mars of the 99% Invisible, host and producer of 99% Invisible. We're coming up on another segment, and in the segment ahead, we're going to talk music, and Kim Gordon will be joining us, musician formerly with Sonic Youth. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.